This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3846, from Monday, the 1st of May, 2023. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for April 2023. It is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 64 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in April 2023.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Morris calling from Edinburgh, and this is the Community News Show. And I'm first one to talk because Ken's not available today. But I do have along with me...
Rowan.
thank you. And we need a sort of flag to say, you speak next, but got no means of waving it at each other. So Rowan's along with me, and we've got the usual process of reviewing the shows in the past month and having a look at the comments and anything on the mailing list, which I can tell you ahead of time, there's nothing. So, anyway. We will plow on. So there are no new hosts. We usually announce new hosts at this point when we doing the show. There aren't any, sadly, but there you go. But we'll start with the first show of the month, which was the community news for March. And we do have a comment on this, which we'll now click on. And the comment is from Kevin O'Brien, who entitles it, Updating Your Profile. I've wanted to update my profile, but I haven't discovered how to do it. I could then add my Mastodon account, says Kevin. It's less obvious than it should be, I always feel. You need to send in a show. You can see what we did there. And as part of the form, there's a place where you can adjust your profile or add one if you don't have one. So that's really the way to do it. But to ask Kevin to send in a show when he's extremely profligate with his shows seems a little bit unfortunate. So if the worst comes to the worst, we can edit these things. So I'm prepared to do the odd one or two if that's an easier way for anybody. All right.
That sounds good. I mean, I think it is, and it just makes things simpler. Well, one, there's the encouragement, and two, then we don't have to, you know, set up a whole profile login and all the, you know, security things that come with it this way. I mean,
yeah,
it just keeps things simple.
Yes. Maybe we need better indicators as to where to go to do it. Maybe it probably is there. I'm pretty certain it will be there, but you need to dig fairly deeply to find it, I would guess. So we need to think about making it a little bit more obvious perhaps. So moving on then to the next show, 3827, which is a reply to 3798. 3798, I haven't actually checked to see what that is. This is Brian in Ohio responding to a show which mentioned Slackware, I think, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think this he's responding to bootloaders.
Just quickly looking.
328. Oh, wait, no, that's the next.
3798 is Mechatroniac, a show where he's talking about setting up a laptop and having some issues about doing so, I think. And there was comments about installing Slackware anyway. So you I think Brian O'Hara is coming in to say there's some hints and tips about how to do it.
Sorry, I'm trying to get myself organized here. I had too many tabs open. Let me and now I've got the wrong one. I'll be right back.
It's usually me that gets my tabs tied in a knot.
Okay. So, yes, I think he was. I think Brian talks about Lilo and eLilo, which is one of the original, I think, bootloader for Linux.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so he's. I think you're right. I think he's responding to those issues that they were having with setting up the laptop.
Yep. Okay, that's good. If you're interested in Slackware, I'm sure there's some useful stuff there. Never wanted to try it myself, but you know, it's always that day when you think, "Ooh, is that laptop sitting there and it's don't like what's running on it? What shall I try?" And Slackware might be a thing that you would try. So yeah, worth knowing.
Definitely.
So next show is from some guy on the internet, Scotty, as he's often known, another issue of the Oh No News. And these are turning out to be really very good, actually, highlighting various security issues and bits of news and so forth. So yeah, it's this is a good show format, I think.
Yes, yeah, he's doing a great job. I'm really enjoying his Oh No News and the added audio effects or touches that he adds to them.
Yeah, I know, he's having a great time, isn't he? I like the Oh No's in the background. They're really cool.
Yeah, and we do have one comment. I can do it. So Brian in Ohio comments on the episode, entertaining. New, that's entertaining. I like it. I think that was supposed to be news. That's entertaining. I like it.
Yeah, very good. Very good. That's certainly entertaining. No doubt about that. So next show was myself and Mr. X having a chat in the recent past. It seems like a long time ago. It was March the 11th. I put it in the notes. So what we've ended up doing is going to grab a lunch or late breakfast or something in a pub, and then since there's nowhere else to go and record stuff, you can't really do it in a pub. There's too much ambient noise. We go and sit in my car usually, and record stuff there. So we were just chatting about a bunch of different topics that had come up, things we'd been doing, things we planned to do, and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's always a fun thing to do. I'm not sure how much fun it is to listen to. It's fun to do.
No, I always enjoy them. You two always have interesting topics, I mean, to cover, and always seem to have, you know, something going on, especially Mr. X.
Yeah, he's for a guy who's got a really demanding job, he always seems to have some interesting thing to do, or is doing, or thinking about, or developing, or whatever. Yeah, so good. We're planning another one before long, so hopefully we'll get some good topics together for that.
Yeah, that's good. I guess the only thing is you got to beware where you park, so you don't look too shady with
two guys. There's two guys in a car talking into a microphone. CIA, what is going on here? Okay, so the next show is from a hooker, and it's entitled Into New Mexico. And they're moving from, where were they before? In Arizona, I think, and then they moved on to New Mexico. Is that right?
Yes.
These good. I love these. I've said this every time, I think. These sort of it's a travel diary type of thing, with lots of pictures as well. If you go and dig into the Flickr stuff, I enjoy seeing people's holidays and vacations and stuff. It's very cool. Wish I could do some of these myself.
Yeah, it is. It is nice. And it, you know, of course, he has it like with his diary and everything. It makes it really a nice way to review it in multiple sort of aspects between the pictures and his narration and just all the places they've been able to visit.
Yeah. No, it's good to be looking over the shoulder of somebody who's doing stuff like this. That's good for him. And good for him for having the organizational skills to keep these sorts of notes together. You know, that's very impressive. I've often wanted to do that, but never really done it to this level of sophistication.
Yeah, the same here. I'm usually lucky to just get us organized and get there and then relax without adding the extra, like, oh, I really should document. I mean, it's true. You'd like to be able to go back and look, because now you think back on things and you remember highlights, but there's still probably a lot of details that just fade with, time.
Yep. My son is a great traveler. He and his girlfriend try and go to lots of places. I think their trip to China was a little bit of a stretch, but anyway, that was quite a few years ago. But there was one year they went to Japan, and they were keeping a log of everything with pictures on a Google Drive thing or something. for us lot at home. And wow, I must have taken them so much effort to do. You know, every time you come home from some mountain climbing exercise or something and sit down and write up stuff that you've done and stitch in all the pictures and things, it needs great dedication.
Definitely, yes. Yes, it does.
So the next one was some guy on the internet again with another show. It were entitled Introducing Bumblebee, a friend who is joining him on the show. So they were having some quite interesting discussions about all manner of things that they come across on the internet. Quite a variety of things, actually. All beautifully annotated in the notes, I should say. I found this quite fascinating, and Bumblebee sounds like quite an individual. Lots of things to say. Very bright and pleasant and interesting to listen to. So yeah, cool.
Yep, definitely brings a sort of, I think, like a fresh pair of eyes to things. You know, after you've sort of been doing it for years and years, you sort of have your view set, and now you're seeing it through the eyes of somebody that, you know, obviously has some experience, but is still, I feel, you know, sort of coming up in the tech awareness and tech, you know, the how it works side of things.
Yeah. It's good to have new eyes looking at on these things, new minds considering them and so on. Very, very good. There were three comments on this one. I'll do the first one from Trey. It says, great interview. Bumblebee, thanks for sharing. I look forward to hearing more from you in the future. Scotty, what a great interview. I love this format of open discussion with a guest to get to know them and their perspective on the topics. Keep up the awesome work.
And second comment from Brian in Ohio. Liked it. I liked the interview. Hope to hear more of your conversations. It's a shame that the Cricut is so locked down, but there are great tools like Inkscape to make SVG files. Check out PC Linux OS Magazine. Lots of good GIMP and Inkscape tutorials. Looking forward to when you become a Slackware user. Smiley face emoji.
Very good. I felt motivated to comment on this one. I was a bit late listening to show, so I was a bit behind the time. So anyway, I said, excellent show. I'm a bit late listening to it, but this was the most entertaining and interesting show. I've always enjoyed shows with several people interacting, and this was a good example of how to do it. Some great discussion as well as some insights into the Cricut. I'd heard of these devices and have a daughter who'd love to have one. But not going to happen just now. Anyway, more of these types of shows, please. That's the finishing line.
I do believe your wish will be granted.
Yes, I happen to have my crystal ball is telling me it might well come to me. So next we have a show from Minix, who has contributed to HBR before, but not often. And he's a host on the Linux Lugcast, so I do listen to that. On and off, and he's talking about how I left Google behind, and this is pretty good actually. I've followed this route myself to a small extent, but haven't managed to close down everything to avoid a fair bit. He also hasn't closed down everything, but he's done more work on the subject than I have. I thought that was most interesting.
Yes, it's I've read different articles. I know some of the people on Late Night Linux have like de-Googled themselves completely, and then I love like listening, you know, how Minix was going about it. It's like one of those things you look at and you're like, that would be great, but it just feels so mind-boggling, overwhelming to actually start down that path, because I have let Google weave itself into so many aspects of things that
you're quite right. Yeah, I sort of think of myself sort of painting myself into the smallest possible corner and then going, how do I escape, you know, and realizing which of my limbs I've cut off as a consequence, you know, as it were. It's worrying. It's worrying that it is the case, but that you feel it would be desirable to disengage totally, but the consequences would not be good.
Yep, but I guess that's how they get you. Yep. But yeah, probably would be good to start like picking something and working on, you know, some service or something that I can, you know, use less of.
So there's one comment. Would you, yep. I think it's your turn, would you mind?
Sure. And a comment from Brian in Ohio. Thank you. Great show, Minix. Keep them coming. You might try NewPy to watch your YouTube anonymously on Android.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that because I've not investigated that area at all, but it's an interesting pointer.
Yeah, I didn't look into it. I wonder if it's something similar, like, you know, where you have the, what is it, for the DL, what YouTube DL, I think is the name of the program, that lets you download the YouTube video to your hard drive on your laptop or computer and watch it that way.
Yep. I know of it. I have used it occasionally. I tend not to want to watch things on a phone or whatever. I just watch them, you know, through the web browser mostly. But yeah, I can see. I mean, it would be useful to be able to collect stuff, and if you're traveling and you might not be in contact with good cell networks or Wi-Fi or whatever to be able to do that type of thing. Yeah, good. Now next, we have a show from Ken Fallon, and it's another one of the podcast recommendation series where Ken is recommending the Software Freedom podcast. I think he said that he had been in touch with the Software Freedom people while at FOSDEM and realized that it was time that we actually had a proper reference type podcast to them. So yeah, we heard episode 14, I think it was, World of Mesh Networking. And I actually listened to the podcast, though I'm way behind with them. I haven't read this one yet, but it was it's a great podcast. And they do a really good job. So yeah, excellent.
Yeah, it's nice. And I think I had actually, I think in the last year had started, I already had it in my feed, their Software Freedom podcast. So it was kind of, you know, cool that the worlds were colliding. But
Yeah. That's good. I mean, it's easy to miss these things unless you actually go out hunting for them. Or you get recommendations and stuff. But you know, I think it's a good thing that we on HBR are providing recommendations, even if it's superfluous to many people. There'll be some that will appreciate it, I think.
Yes, I agree.
So next we had the episode 5 of the New Year show recording. And this one, I've forgotten how long these are being kept in a reasonable length. So there's about 2 hours. I see this particular one. So, yeah, so this is a continuation of obviously episode 4. And I do enjoy these. This one was as interesting as all of them I've heard, but some of the issues with Mumble, somebody had speakers in the background or something, because there was a huge amount of echoing whenever they keyed up. I think they had push to talk, but whenever they did the push, the echoing came in, and it made it really dreadful to listen to, I found. So I skipped a bit of it to avoid that, because it mangles my brain listening to that. But yeah, it kept being commented on by some of the more experienced podcasters on the show, saying, you know, do something about it. But I don't think anybody actually did fix it in the end. So everybody started to, I think when that particular person keyed up, they tended to be quiet, so there was less chance of there being echo. But I don't really know exactly what was going on there. But it does spoil it somewhat. I think that message needs to be conveyed to next year's participants.
Yeah, but that, you know, and I mean, I'm still new to sort of the group chat, but it, I mean, audio is always one of those things that can be a real bugaboo to get right. And then, you know, on top of then having a bunch of people with varying levels of skill and varying setups and, you know.
Yeah.
It does make a difference.
It's never going to be perfect. Oh, that's certainly true. But in general, it's good. I'm getting about 80 to 90% good ratings on these shows personally. That's my sort of analysis of them. So, you know, it's not a massive deal.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a pretty amazing undertaking. And like we said, this year's show notes have been incredible. So
yeah,
you know, don't sort of slog through or skip good bits. You at least have a lot of information still to read over.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's, I think we've congratulated the show note writers several times, but
I think
we could definitely do so again, because it's a brilliant piece of work. It makes it a whole different experience, I think. So next, we have Archer 72, who is continuing work on his retro karaoke machine. This is part two, and he's... The subtext says Archer 72 fixes misplaced belts and figures out what really happened. So
I definitely enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I do enjoy these. I'm fascinated with how these things work, and you know, to see somebody who's got the skills to debug and fix them is pretty fascinating.
Yep. Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with all those rollers and belts and things.
Yeah, I know. It's a nightmare when you look inside one of these things for the first time. From a point of view of inexperience, it's quite scary. But yeah, he's made some good headway with it, I think. So yeah, he did actually fix it, didn't he? Yeah, it doesn't say quite as much as that in the notes, but my notes, I say yes, he did actually get it fixed, so and made it work more reliably. So
I think it, you know, cleaning up. I think he still had some issues with it. Maybe like where you see the picture where he's putting his finger on it. I can't remember. I thought at the end had a little bit of issue with it not latching or quite right.
Now you say that, I remember him saying that. So the location of the cassette was not ideal. Something was broken. Maybe on the something should have been pressing it in, holding it rigidly. That was. Maybe not working, but it's amazing that we ever use this sort of stuff, isn't it? It's quite surprising that we relied on this strange mechanical stuff to listen to music and things. So yeah, yep. Good to see. So the next show was me again, and I'm talking about a Linux tool called, I don't know how you say this, I've been calling it Zoxide. It's a Z and followed by the word oxide. I think I did work out that it's based on a thing that was originally just given the name of Z and was written in some language or other. I'm not sure what. And then somebody rewrote it in Rust. So the oxide, does that refer to...
I would say that's probably the rust.
It's a pun. It's a joke.
But, I'd give it a very American... name of the Z oxide.
Yes. Yes, I know. I was bothered by not being able to decide on how best to say it. But anyway, it's an alternative to CD, but it knows things about where you've been. So it can, if you give it a partial directory name, then it will work out where you're likely to want to go based on the data it has and a sort of weighting scoring system. For me, it does the job really, really well. And it's great for lazy people like me who can't be bothered to type great long directory names. So I think it's very, very cool.
I haven't tried it yet, but it was definitely interesting. Actually PushD and PopD, it's like one of those things I cycle through and I use them for a while and then I forget about them until somebody reminds me that they're there. This Zoxide does sound very useful.
Yeah. Yes. Since I found it, I've been using it constantly. I occasionally forget, but even if you do, if you type CD, this thing still watches you and knows where you've been. So, I find it to be pretty useful. I don't know how I managed to survive without it, to be honest. So, yeah. I noticed that I think you pointed this out to me at some point, didn't you? That the way in which the show notes are shown, they contain a bunch of Unicode characters, and they're being rendered messily at the moment. But I'm going to comment upon this whole issue when we get to the any other business a bit later on. So if you're following along, as you listen to this show, don't be surprised that there's some apparent junk in the notes. There is an issue that we are resolving at the moment. So next we're running very, very low on shows but that particular time, and there was a void opening up in front of us as far as shows were concerned, and Ken used a couple of emergency shows to fill the two empty slots. This was the first one, which was from Mike Ray, and it's called Make a Vortex Cannon. He's making this device which can extinguish a candle at 10 feet, he says. So good stuff, actually. I've never done this, but I've seen people do it, and I always find it quite impressive.
Yeah, that is a good show. I am now thinking this one might be fun to try to do with my girls, or maybe for an upcoming birthday party or something, see if you can blow out the birthday candles with a vortex cannon.
Ooh, that would be fun. Yeah. One of the things about this, Mike said to use a hole punch or a hole cutter in the base of the Pringles can, which is metal. And I was thinking, I'm not quite sure what he means. And I suddenly realized that there was a point where we all had access to these things where you drilled a hole, you put a two-part thing through it, which was held, the two halves of which were held with the bolt, and they had cutting edges, and you tighten the bolt and it's cut through the metal. I've not actually done that myself, but I've seen people using it. I don't know. I mean, they must still exist, but I've never seen anybody use one of those since. It's usually these hole saw type things I see people using. Not good for this type of job, though. It'll leave a horribly ragged edge.
I don't even know if I've ever had a hole punch, to be perfectly honest.
I think I had access to one when I was a student, maybe, and there was a workshop that we could use with all sorts of fancy stuff in, and hole punch was definitely a thing I saw used, but never used myself. Anyway, it's just a thing. It's a sort of a device from the past, as far as I'm concerned. It would do a good job.
Yep.
I've forgotten whose turn it is to do the comments. There's one here. Is it mine?
I'll take it, since I've been doing a lot of Brian in Ohio. comment one from Brian in Ohio. Intro. The nice thing about an emergency show was hearing the original HBR intro music. I like it so much better than the new intro music. It seems like a lot of people, most, again, the old, in parentheses, better intro music, don't produce shows. Go figure.
Yeah.
There's a controversial statement.
Yes. It was quite nice to hear the old tune. It did great a bit of variety, I think. I mean, when we were using that all the time, it did get a little bit tedious, I found. But it was nice when people were rotating around the different tunes. But I don't want to give Ken more work in having a random tune selector necessarily.
It would be nice to have the RIN. I think maybe once we get some other things taken care of, maybe we can look at. I think the biggest problem people had was just trying to get the sound volume, you know.
Yeah.
And that, I think, if, you know, we could have automated that a little bit, may have made that, you know, better for people and found that not so annoying. But but yeah, it was nice to hear the old music.
I know that the one of the things I was involved with in the early days when I joined HBR as a janitor, we weren't janitors in those days, but anyway, was to say, can we not turn this thing down? I think we reduced the volume on the audio that you could drop into your show and stuff. Because it was, when you looked at the levels in Audacity or something, the difference was frighteningly. There's a huge big step from the blaring intro and the outro as well. People said that they got woken up by the outro. Remember that? which, you know, there was a certain serendipity there, I guess. I'm not sure. Anyway, good. So next we have the other emergency show that I mentioned. This is John Culp, who is recording an episode as he bikes to work. I don't know if this preceded He had constructed a reclining bike by fixing two bikes, pieces of frames together, brazing them, I think he did. Whether this was that bike, I don't know. I don't think he ever said, but it was good. And I like these type of ambient things. Yes, sorry, go on.
I don't think he definitely didn't mention the reclining bike. That vaguely rings a bell, but I don't remember it exactly.
I remember it particularly because he had a lot of images of the construction process, and he had them on his home server, and then his server crashed, and all the pictures linked in from the show. In the show, I should say, were failing. So he managed to recover all the pictures off of the disk off his server, and I put them onto the HBR server as a sort of a thing that you could scroll through. I think I can't remember what I did now, but so I remember that one in quite a lot of detail. He went to a huge amount of trouble to get all the bits and fix them together and make a reclining seat and all this stuff. It looked really good. Amazing. Never ridden one of those.
I'll have to go back and look for that. I guess the one thing about this episode is I was just sort of getting settled to listen to this nice long bike ride to work, and like I didn't realize he was only like 2 or 3 minutes away on his bike.
Yes, I know. He said something like he couldn't go his normal route because the bridge was out. He lives next to a river or a stream or something, and he had to go the long way around. But even the long way around was pretty short. A matter of minutes. So
yeah,
it's good though. Good. It's nice to hear John's voice again on these on HBR.
I agree.
And we had another show from March 72. This time ripping CDs from the terminal using command line stuff. So yeah, he's talking about it's an odd name. My eyes keep skipping over the name. ABCDE. She did explain. I've lost the explanation, but never mind. But yeah, it sounds like quite a cool thing for turning the audio from a CD into a digitized form on your machine. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a neat little tool. There's times now I wish I'd known about it earlier, back when I was converting some of my CDs and, you know, ripping them onto my disc.
Yeah, I know. It was never that easy to do. Was there not a thing called K3B or something? If you were a KDE user, I think I used that, which was a reasonable GUI thing that you mounted the CD and then told it where to put stuff and how to name things and that sort of stuff. But this one uses one of these databases, CDDB, which is now a GNU thing. Don't know much about it. What was it called before? I can't remember.
I think originally there was Music Brains.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Then they, you know, closed down. You know, you I think needed a subscription now to use it. It's not quite as open and out there. So there's the GNU db.org, I guess is now what he's using.
Yeah, which is pretty cool if that's available. Anyway, yeah, nice, because it can make the whole process of converting a CD a lot more straightforward, in that you get all of the proper track names and that sort of stuff, which may not be visible in the CD. It's only certain formats that where that would be the case, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there are, yeah, particularly for CDs, it does make it much nicer. I spent a lot of time typing in album names and track names and artist names when I was first doing conversions.
Yeah. I think I used, because I've been a KDE user for a long time, there was a tool called Amarok in the earlier days of KDE. And I think it did actually do various searches to find out the names of tracks and stuff. And, you know, track ordering and all that sort of stuff. But I think you had to configure it up to point to whatever these things were. Maybe not Music Brains, but there was a thing called CDDB, was there? Is that the generic name for these things? I don't know.
It sounds familiar. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, same here. But yeah, this sounds really good, though. It's a good thing to know about. So no comments on that one. Next show is from Hooker, playing the original Civilization, and he gives hints on playing that game. And it's the origin of the Civilization hierarchy of games, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like he was talking from the original games, or the original game. It's been, and then how they sort of, some of them evolved, particularly with some of the commands you could do.
Yep. I think he's got more shows on this subject further on down, well, anyway, there's a bunch around this particular subject, whether they preceded this or follow it, I can't remember. But cool. It's always good to know about these things. Not a thing that makes me want to play it personally, but then I'm not much of a game player, so I'm no yardstick at all. So
I'm right there with you, Dave. We were definitely not, I think, the people to be doing reviews of games.
No. I'd be turning people away in droves, I think, if I tried that. So comments are pretty sparse, but the next one is from Scotty and Bumblebee. They've got another edition of the Oh No News, and they're talking about ransomware in relation to the U.S. Marshals Service, amongst other things. So
that's another good episode. He always know ransomware is going on. You just never think about, like, all the places, you know, that are getting hit, and all the various, you know, not only from, you know, your personal computer to your healthcare provider to your local government.
Yeah. I could not understand back in the day as Windows was starting to become, I go back quite a long way, but, you know, Windows 3.1 was leading on to whatever else, and how it was that everybody was running in administrator mode, because if you didn't, you couldn't do half the stuff that you needed to do. And as a consequence, things like opening a link in an email would cause bits of software to grab the privilege and rip your system apart. Why is that still the case? I something I'm missing here. Is it just there's no incentive to make it any better? I thought Windows had been improved in terms of this sort of stuff, but is it still an issue that you just click on a thing and bam, you got ransomware all over your environment?
It's definitely getting better. I mean, I think, like, particularly the latest versions of Windows, you know, has you create a regular user. With ransomware, it can still be, you know, particularly in a business or, you know, something where there's a bunch of users and they have to have access to certain resources. So if somebody, you know, even if it's not encrypting the whole file system, it's still encrypting, you know, it's getting into their data. And if it's data you need for your job, you know, that a lot of people then need access to that same data, you still end up with that, you know, even if it doesn't take down the whole system, it gets through all the data that everybody needs to do the business, mm-hmm, of the job, mm-hmm, not necessarily, yep, the operating system itself.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Yeah. So if it's something that you have right access to, even though you're not privileged, then it could, and it's a shared resource, then it could grab it and encrypt it. So you'd have thought that there would be ways in which you could limit access or limit the writability, or, you know, have permissions on various bits. Having worked in the university where we were always paranoid about students who tended to be fairly smart getting into things and destroying stuff, we always tried to have as many, whatever they were, policies or whatever, that restricted access to only those areas that were relevant to the students' work and stuff.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I wasn't involved with that. I was the Linux guy, or one of the Linux team. So, yeah, I was just observing. but
Well, I think people are becoming more and more aware of you need to, you know, push that least, you know, least permissions down the stack a little farther. I think there's sort of leftovers from that. Well, I'm not running as root, so it must be okay. So I'm not really going to worry about, oh, do I need read-only permissions or read-write permissions? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know enough about it really, but it just puzzles me that things are so, or have been, or so wide open in the past, and it's been an incredibly slow process to make them more secure over the years. It just seemed ridiculous. The assumption that opening an email could devastate your business, it seems to me to be the height of insanity. There you go. That's just me.
We should all be using Pine as our email reader.
yeah. Been there, done that. Didn't like it very much. So I don't know whose turn it is to comment, but I'll comment on this one because it's really a retrospective thing. Ken posted on this show that the play button on each show page has been moved to the top of the episode, and this was the show where it was commented on. I think Bumblebee was asked, what do you think of the HBR stuff, and she said, yeah, but why is it so hard to find the button? And I think, as you were saying earlier on, that fresh insight, fresh view of things, is why would you put the button, you know, on your cassette player underneath it, you know, why would you do that? And so that was very, very useful and helpful comment, I think.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it was put up there as sort of like, oh, in case you're here and you want to, but with the idea, I think most people who worked on the site came from it from, oh, I'm just, you know, it's going into my podcatcher. You playing it on some other, through some other means, so you don't even really think about the usability of the website as
that's very, very true. I don't use the website itself to listen to stuff, except for very, very, very rarely. So yeah, it's easily done. And the other factor was that in the earlier days, show notes were very, very minimal, so you'd see it.
True.
The button, because it would be there on the, you know, you wouldn't need to scroll at all to find it in many cases. That was probably another reason.
Yeah, that's probably a good reason it took so long for it, you know, because people are now, I definitely, even in just since I've been listening over the last, well, I don't know how many years now, 5 or 6 or 7, but the show notes have definitely improved. I would say improved is a good word to describe, you know, in general.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so they've been getting pushing. I guess that would push the play down the page a little bit.
Yes. Anyway, it's fixed now, so that's good. So next show was from Mr. X, and I think this is the show he mentioned when we were chatting about shows and stuff, saying he'd recorded it a while ago, but he hadn't got around to doing the notes and all that sort of stuff yet. But so yeah, this is in the series What's in My Toolkit, or What's in My Bag, as it's often interpreted, and it is what's in Mr. X's rucksack. See, he goes through the bag that he takes to work.
And very detailed in everything.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got some strange and wonderful things in there. I'm sure we are all guilty, if it's guilt at all. I mean, we could all find that we would make shows of a similar length if we went into our various bags. I certainly would be one of those. I sometimes reach in, what on earth is that? Why have I got a piece of string in the bottom of this bag in a bag? Well, yeah, and those sorts of things. So I think I probably had a rucksack which needed a bit of string to stop things coming undone or something. I can't remember. It would be the answer to in my particular case. But you know what I mean? It's very easy to accumulate weird things in the bag that you're lugging around all the time.
Yeah, sometimes it becomes quite the archaeological dig as you...
Indeed.
So I usually find out when you have to move from one rucksack to the other, like, why don't... Oh, I guess I don't really need to carry that around with me again.
Yeah. No, that is very true. It's... I think bag I have here beside me could do being completely emptied and then refilled, and I think a fair amount would not return back to it. I love to see shows with pictures. It always adds a dimension to the whole business. So yeah, it's good.
I enjoyed it. I did enjoy the pictures too.
I'm just scrolling down. It took a long time, but yeah, no comments on this one, but it was good. So next we have a contribution from the Linux Lugcast podcast, and this is a thing that this is Honky Magoo who I think organized this. He has done this before, sending in the sort of pre-show stuff that they do, which they record and then put on the end of their shows, but he has in the past sent them in to us and not attached them to his shows, because it's a good way to have to send a show of some sort in when we're very low, and that's what he's doing here. So they're just generally chatting about all manner of stuff. There's quite a lot of TV and movie watching and things. Yeah, I enjoyed this, actually. Yeah.
Yep, I did too. They definitely covered a wide variety of topics.
Yeah. I know. The show itself can be a bit like this. I do listen, though the rate at which they produce long shows is overwhelming me. I can't keep up with them, so I'm way, way, way behind with them. But I enjoy what they do. They've got some gems amongst all the other odds and sods that they compile. So yeah, it's very cool. Thank you for that, Honky Magoo.
So, and it looks like there's one comment. From Brian in Ohio. Thanks. Reminds me why I don't listen to Mintcast, or is that TLLTS?
That's the Linux Link Tech Show.
Okay.
And I think I don't know what he's getting at, really. I don't listen to Mintcast anymore. Again, too many podcasts. I can't keep up. TLLTS tended to be incredibly long and got a bit sort of rancorous over the years. Lots of people firing shots at each other and things, so I stopped listening to that one too. But whatever. That's Brian in Ohio's view.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've actually listened to any of those podcasts myself.
The Linux Link Tech Show was one of the very early podcasts. And as I was, that come across the idea of podcasts, maybe 2005, something like that, got myself a little player, an iRiver player. I was hunting around for something that might be interesting and found them. And I did enjoy them. There was a different style of things in those days and different people. So, I did listen to them for a fair number of years. But, things change, including yourself, So I moved into other areas.
Yep, I understand. My podcasts have changed a good bit too since from when I first started listening.
Yes. So the next one is another show from the new year, episode 6 from the collection, and again another 2-hour episode, which was good. Some interesting stuff again, and fantastic notes, as you said before. It's you can get a lot out of that. Just reading the notes. So, yeah.
And there's one comment from Brian in Ohio. Interesting show. Edgy. Did I miss it, or did Pro Podcaster ever mention the shows he does?
Not sure who. Pro Podcaster possibly was Joe Ressington, because I think he was making the point that he wants to make a living. He said this from the start. He wanted to make a living being a podcaster. So, yeah, he's got a fair number of shows now, hasn't he? There's the Ubuntu podcast has recently been resurrected under his podcast hierarchy or something. Not sure.
I have to admit, this was one I had on sort of in the background at work, and so I'm not, I don't have a really great recollection of many of the things going on.
I was, my attention was going in and out, because I, as usual, one tends to listen to, especially the longer podcasts, while doing something else. I can't remember what I was doing, but it was something that took my attention away from time to time. So, quite understandable. But I think it was Joe Rester who has had a tradition of joining in with these things. and some interesting things to say. So, okay, so we're coming on to the last one, which is using TMUX, the terminal multiplexer, and it's an overview for Amarcha 72, and he uses TMUX and restores sessions between reboots, which is good. Yeah, I this is one I'm going to have to go back and listen to again, because there's a lot of quite packed amount of information in here. I don't use TMUX. I still use Screen. There was a point a few years ago where I thought, well, Screen's really old now. I should move to TMUX, shouldn't I? And then I looked at TMUX and said, well, what does it give me that Screen doesn't? What is there that I would want that it does offer me that Screen doesn't offer? And the answer came back, well, actually very little. I'm not sure I'm prepared to change. However, listening to this, I'm going to need to review that, because I didn't realize there were plugins for TMUX. Yeah. Do you use it yourself, Ron?
No, I've used Screen a little bit. I think I might have tried TMUX, because I remember when it first came out, and after a year, and I've read different articles on, you know, the differences between TMUX and Screen, although I don't remember any of the particulars at this point. There have been times when I'm like, I don't want this long running job to die if my SSH fails, so I'll fire up. But I think I'd end up defaulting to Screen, because that was probably the first one I heard about.
Yeah, and they all work on the basis that you have to, they both work on the basis that you have to put in a prefix, control A, I think is the default, followed by some character sequence, which causes various things to happen, like creates a new session or splits the screen or those types of things. So once you've got that wired into your brain, there's a certain reluctance to move away from it. At least in my case, I'm a bit reluctant to drop it and start learning it all over again. I suppose I could reprogram TMUX to be closer to Screen, and I think they are pretty similar in many ways. So maybe it wouldn't be such an issue to do.
But, yeah, and I'm sure if you look, there's probably somebody out there that has like a blog on how to set TMUX up like Screen.
Yeah. I'm tempted to give it a proper try, actually, based on this. I use it to do various HPR things. I log into a remote machine and I have several sessions open, screen sessions open. I can then hop around in and do various tasks. So that's quite useful. I don't use it a huge lot, but it is quite useful to be able to come back to and find the thing in the same state as last time. But if I were to run it on my desktop, then the reboot thing would be an issue.
Okay.
So it would be, you know, because you effectively lose everything. You can't scroll back to see what you typed a bit earlier on. You could still find it in the history, of course, but you can't scroll back and see output and that type of thing. So I'm just wondering if it would be quite fun to have TMUX instead. So, yeah, good show. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, it was a very interesting show.
So that's the month's shows reviewed. And we have a bunch of comments that relate to previous shows that have come up in the past month, so we can have a quick look at those. The first one is a comment on show 3819, remapping mouse buttons with Xbind keys on Linux by John Culp, and it's a comment by ZenFloater2. And he says, it's that John Culp again. I thought for sure they banished him from the internet for playing a musical instrument. He's apparently out now. Very good, very good.
And on a comment on episode 3822, A Tale of Wonder, Angst, and Woe by Bookworm, comment to Bookworm. A small update. Co-worker found this link to an article explaining the functionality of the watch. And that gives a link to an article, Hong Kong uses tracking wristbands for coronavirus quarantine. So this is, I guess, in response to Bookworm's talking about when he went to Hong Kong and got tested positive for COVID and had to be quarantined.
Yep.
While there.
I think the previous comment was from Windigo, who said the watch didn't have a huge lot of functionality itself. It was more it plus the app on your phone that would blow the whistle on you if you left the place you were supposed to be or something to that effect. So I haven't actually looked at this, but I was quite intrigued as to how it worked. So I must remember to go and look at this particular link.
Yeah, I plan on looking at it myself.
Mm-hmm. Next one was 3823 GitLab Pages for Website Hosting by Norrist. And this was a
comment. That's actually from me.
From you. So I'll let you read it.
I guess. Configuring HBR site generator. Great show, Norrist. It did make me revisit the site.config file for the generator. I thought I had a section to configure where the templates folder and output folder is, and there is, although to be fair, I think I added it after his show. If you look for, and then it shows a portion of the code to look for, there's a templates path and an output path that you can now, variables that you can now set. Would save you the copy step in your CI steps. Smiley face.
Very good. Yeah. Good stuff. No, I was fascinated that Norrist piled in there and did some interesting stuff in this area. Very good.
Very encouraging, to be honest.
Indeed. So the next one is 3825, which was show from Minix, and he's talking about creating a natural aquarium, a self-sustaining freshwater aquarium that he built. And he comments himself, it's comment three, is saying, here's a video from my PeerTube instance that goes into more detail about creating one of these tanks. And he points to a video. I've watched nearly all of it. I found it fascinating what he was doing to set up his tank. I'm quite interested in the subject. I doubt whether I shall ever do it myself, but I like finding out more about it. So, yeah, that was good. Good thing to add to the show, I think.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I did watch the whole video. It's definitely, I mean, I think, you know, you do it in small steps, but yeah, it's definitely not time consuming, but it's definitely is something you have to give yourself to get it set up right, I think.
Yep. Needs a lot of dedication, I think, doesn't it?
That's the word I'm looking for. And now a comment from Ahuka. Brings back memories. Thanks for bringing back a lot of memories. I used to keep a bunch of aquariums, all freshwater, back in the 1970s, but gave it up shortly after starting in grad school because I just didn't have the time. I know you might not think aquariums need so much time, but it's more about how grad school hit me.
Yeah, well, it's sort of the point you were making, wasn't it? The dedication and the amount of brain power and time you have to give to that sort of a hobby. But yeah, good if you can. And the final comment on the show was from Minix, who says, "Hi, Ahuka. No, trust me, I know that aquariums can be very time-consuming, especially the more you have. Things go wrong, they're never perfect, that's just life. Glad you enjoyed it." So that's all the comments done. And the next thing we would normally go to would be mailing list discussions. But all there is on the mailing list is a call for shows from Ken and me announcing the recording of this show. So I don't think we need to bother.
I agree.
The LWN.net thing we're tending not to pay much attention to, might be worth dropping that actually, but it's a useful thing to look at if you're in an area where there might be some sort of event that you would want to attend, but not sure we need to review it in the way we were doing it. So finally, I've got a little bit of AOB material to comment on. And did you have something you were gonna say, Ryan?
I just have a very brief update about the static website. So we did actually have one new contributor, Norrist, who added a nice link to the H and Hacker. I must have suggested it through the website, through the repo. I think he posted a comment somewhere. I can't remember exactly where that Ken replied to, and then he posted a patch. And so that is now included. I'm not sure if it made it into the PHP yet, but it is up on the working in the static. So that was cool. The biggest event for the static website.
Yep. But we're very close to being able to go live with the static site. That's my impression. Yeah.
Right? I think we're getting close. Yes.
Yeah.
Just need everybody to find the time to do the last little push.
Yes. Yes. It's real life. Life in general keeps getting in the way in so many cases of things, doesn't it? So But we won't promise that it will be moved ahead by the next time we do one of these shows, but it should be within the next sort of couple of months, I would imagine, at the outside. But don't hold
me to it. That sounds fair. Yeah. Plus or minus a month or two on that.
Yeah. So the only thing I was going to say was that I won't read this whole article because I got a bit verbose with it as I was writing it. Came about Unicode characters in shows that I alluded to briefly on the way. And it came to light during the month that shows with Unicode characters in their title summary or notes were not being represented properly on the website. I put in a definition of what Unicode is from Wikipedia. And a link to the Wikipedia article. If you're interested, there's a lot of information to absorb there. The software and the database behind the HBR website, they come from a time before Unicode, I'm pretty certain, or at least before it was very popular or implemented widely. But they'd been updated to use Unicode encoding a number of years ago. But I think we missed some changes as we did this, because we found that in some cases, the characters, the non-ASCII characters were going into the database and being displayed from the database correctly. But if you looked at it behind the scenes, like grabbing the data out of the database and putting it into the static site, it was messy. It was garbled and not proper Unicode. So something was changing it. And the same thing was changing it back again on the way out, but which is quite amusing. So we're currently ensuring that we've got all the changes made to the code that runs the website, and also we're going to have to go through the database and fix up anything that got mangled during the era of mangling, and then it will be sorted. We'll mention it at some point. I doubt whether anybody's going to be overly upset about it. If you look at stuff on a HBR webpage, it looks strange, then you can probably just assume that we'll get it fixed in the next month or two, a famous month or two timescale. And if it's still awful when you next look at it a bit further down the road, then let us know and we'll follow through. But I think we should be able to fix this without too much difficulty down the road. We are having problems with getting Unicode into tags in audio files, but something I'm working on at the moment, so hopefully we get that solved soon. So that's it then. That's all we have to add, unless you have something else, Ron.
Nope. And thank you for that update on the Unicode. It's one of those things, particularly from running on Linux in a browser, like I've had so many various issues like that I just assumed when I saw it initially that occasionally it was just something with my browser. I didn't even think about the fact that, it was some weirdness going on in the background with HBR. So that may be part of the reason. I mean, obviously it hasn't caused a big stink, as we haven't really got that many comments about it until maybe recently.
It's one of these sort of semi-magical things that go on behind the scenes. You put weird characters in and weird characters come back out again in the same layer as you wanted them to look, and you don't actually consider much about how it all works. And I maybe you, the listener, have know this inside out, but I don't. And so the journey of finding out something about how it all works is quite stretching to the brain. But it's also very interesting.
You've been doing a good job so far, so you can keep your job.
Okay, did I get a raise? Yeah, zero plus zero equals. Anyway, that's us for this month. And so join us again next month for another one of these recordings, or listen to the show thereafter. First Monday of every month, the shows are supposed to come out. So until then, goodbye. And goodbye from Hacker.
Public
Radio. Okay, thanks.
Been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.